When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This episode of the Warriors Huddle is brought to you by The Athletic Club Oakland, a local sports bar we fucking love. If you listen to this podcast, you enjoy watching sports, and you already know that watching games with other fans just makes that experience better. Look, watching a Warriors game on your own is fine. It's crazy fun. I've done it for years. But watching a game in a spot that lets me scream and cheer and just generally lose my shit with other Dub Nation fans is way more fun. COVID stole that from us for a while, and the ACO is giving it back. The Athletic Club Oakland has shut down their entire side street, created an enormous outdoor space called the Town Gardens, and filled that space with tables, more than 15 huge and legitimate TVs, and their full complement of great food, service, and drinks. It's big, it's comfortable, it's a great spot to watch Steph continue to rain threes during this incredible Warriors season, the NFL playoffs, or any other sport with fans while still staying safe. I love this bar. I love their food. I love their space. I love their TVs. I even love that it's basically family friendly. I can go here, get hammered with my friends and get too passionate, or I can roll with my wife and kid and just enjoy brunch while catching a game. The Athletic Club is now our go-to spot to watch all sports, especially the Warriors, and we hope you'll join us there. The Athletic Club Oakland, where sports fans can be sports fans again.
We're going to bring y'all to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. No Marcus, at least up front today. He'll be joining us a little bit later on. But with me, per usual, the master of all things sound and a man who's apparently always looking at four screens at any given time during this podcast, Mr. Maxime Sinnott.
How's it going?
Maxime, I am excited, fired up, couldn't wait to announce that rejoining us after way too long, a 13-year veteran of Yahoo Sports, where she's covered the Olympics, the Super Bowl, the Final Four, and UFC title fights, and perhaps most importantly for this podcast, all three levels of basketball, a draft expert who has followed players like James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga throughout their sporting lives, and a woman who is currently suffering through the dating scene in Utah, Miss Kristen Peek. What's going on, KP?
Listen, 2022, it's going to be my year. I'm putting it out there in the universe. Like, it's going to happen. I mean, I know the dating scene here in Utah is like, I've committed social suicide, but something's going to happen. I'm going to have a breakthrough and everything's going to be okay.
So Maxime, some background here. The last time we all heard KP's voice wasn't that long ago. It was in that Steph Curry-centric episode. But I had the pleasure of recording with her for a while we got her Steph Curry stories. And during that, she sprinkled in little pieces of these nightmares she's fucking having in Utah while dating. And in fact, it wasn't just limited to that conversation. In preparation for today, she shot me a picture of a draft of a dating profile of a guy who's apparently hitting on her out there. It can only be described as someone with a curly mullet, and a mustache that looks like a small animal crawled onto his face and died. And if that wasn't worse enough, at the top of this profile is hashtag Mondays, am I right? Which bothers me
More than I can fucking possibly tell you. Like, what is he, like Garfield the cat? Like, are Monday's jokes still something that happened now? Anyways, I was impressed, KP, and can only hope that you and that gentleman are getting along really well.
No, we're not going down that road with him. That's why I sent it to you. And when he said like Omicron isn't a thing, like that was his hot take. And I had COVID over Christmas. Like, I ruined Christmas in Colorado because I got COVID. Like, no, that guy, it's not happening. But I've also, like, there was a guy that was cutting my grass and I went out to take Gary, my puppy, out for a walk. And he stopped me. He's like, hey, I have a question. He's wearing a Jazz shirt. And I had just written this article about how the Jazz were like the losers of the draft. And so I thought he was going to call me out for that. And instead he's like, are you single? Because it feels like you're flirting with me every time you walk your dog. Oh. And I'm like, okay, I'm in like sweats. I haven't washed my hair in like 4 days. It's not like I'm in like a bikini and high heels walking my dog around. And I was just like, no, I'm not flirting with you. This other guy I went out with, I thought the entire time his name was Andrew. And he kept like, he'd be like, oh, I know. I was like, Alex. And I'm like, who's Alex? And so then I didn't realize that Alex was his name till after the date. I'm calling him Andrew the whole time. And I sent him a message. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I called you Andrew. And he goes, I didn't want to correct you. So like, this is a dude that probably would have changed his name to Andrew for me. And then another guy like said his dream job was to work at the mall at Express. This is like a grown ass man, like a 38-year-old man. And he's like, I'm going to get a job at Express at the mall. I'm like, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of Utah. I have to.
I mean, working from the top, I feel like that first dude looked into the mirror, saw his mustache and was like, only half my face makes me look like an asshole. I definitely need to grow a mullet. And then was able to put it all the way together. And then the aggressive / pompous guy, what's the faster way to make sure somebody runs away from you than insinuating, oh, you're flirting with me? I mean, it just immediately makes you feel awkward. But the one person I'll defend, Christian, and in fact, I'll go ahead and tell you to go fuck yourself. I once took a karate class when I was a kid, and the entire time the teacher called me Fram with an F, and I never felt like saying anything. I was hell of embarrassed by it and let him call me Fram the entire time. So look, those things happen. Don't you worry.
No, but can I tell you, when I was on this date with Andrew / Alex, the whole time, Fram, yes. The whole time we're sitting there at a bar and like, he's talking my ear off. I'm not even listening to him anymore. And a guy sits down next to him. And all I can think of is, how do I get out of this date and start talking to this guy? Like, do I follow him to the bathroom? Like, I don't know. That's how bad that date was. I'm like, I couldn't tell you a single thing Andrew / Alex said to me in the last hour. It was bad.
Two follow-ups. One is just a suggestion. You need to go back out with Andrew / Alex and just fire off a new name for him every sentence. Bob, Grant, you know, just see when he ultimately crosses the line or draws the line rather. But maybe more importantly, in follow-up question, what was it about the other dude? That other guy sits down and you're like, oh, I need to meet this guy. What was it? Was he like shirtless or something? Was he just hella good looking? Like, what caught your eye about that dude?
He looked, I'm sorry to say this, but he looked like he wasn't from Utah. I went there to watch basketball and this dude's just talking my ear off. And the guy sitting next to him was actively watching the game. And I'm like, why am I not on a date with this guy? All I'm going to say.
Excuse me, sir. Two follow-up questions. Are you watching that basketball game? And are you not from Utah? It's like, yeah, let's
And make are you this single? Happen. Yes.
We got a lot of basketball related topics. First, a little bit of logistics. So we've got a new thing going here, Christian. We're going to call it the Body Posture Police. Last week, I called it the Master of All Things Body Posture or Body Posture, but that's a little reductive. So what we have going here, and I gave this title to Maxime last week, but he was terrible at it. So I am now taking the title. I get to watch everybody on here. And if at any point I feel like you guys are bored or not having the time of your life, I will call it out. And the reason I had to take it out from Maxime's hands, while we were announcing it, Marcus, who actually showed up to that podcast, started yawning and fucking Maxime didn't say shit. Like, literally didn't say one thing about it. It's the only reason we gave him the role. So that has been stripped from him. I will be serving as our body posture police. Maxime, any parting thoughts before this title is completely stripped from it?
Yeah, it's bullshit. I deserve that title. Listen, the whole thing, Bram, you're the host of the show. You're talking. I've been habituated over years to not talk over you when you're in the middle of a take because, like, you got great takes, you know? And so while he's yawning, you're talking. I'm not going to talk over you. That's horrendous radio. And yet, for some reason, now I'm being stripped of the title for doing a great job.
Let the record reflect that Maxime's body posture showed that he agrees with me, and he thinks 100% that I should be the body posture police. Let's jump in, you guys.
Need a good podcast recommendation? Well, the Players Tribune has launched its first ever mental health podcast called Blindsided. It's hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Diane McIntosh. The podcast lets listeners hear athletes describe the life-changing moments when mental health became the most important focus in their lives. They dive deep, get clinical, and allow listeners to get a better understanding of the different mental health challenges people face, why they appear, and how athletes specifically, like Kevin Love, Paul Bissonnette, and Kurt Warner, learned to take them head-on. Blindsided is a sports podcast, not only for people who follow sports, but also for those who don't. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're going to break ranks a little bit today. So we normally start with the glass half full. And we look back at things we like and we don't like. But instead, I'm going to go back to a segment we haven't done for a while. It's one of my favorite. It's the Off the Court Report. The idea is pretty simple. If you listen to this podcast, you like basketball enough where you watch every single second of what happens during the 48 minutes that the Warriors are playing. But Kristen, like some of our other guests, is lucky enough to have access to these guys in a way that we can only dream of. She watches them both off the court and in some instances on the court, but outside of the 48 minutes. And here today, I happen to know that Kristen was in Utah for the Warriors' big victory there and actually had a great story from the warmups. So let me just shut up and throw it to her. Kristen, what do you got?
All right. So I walked in after like the coaches all meet with media at like 5:15. And then I usually just go out. It's my favorite time of like pregame is watching everybody else warm up. So I walk out and usually there's like, let me just set in previous Utah games, there's usually like 30 people, Utah fans watching Donovan Mitchell warm up. He's got his headphones on, he's focused, but they all like love him. I walk in, there's probably like 150, 200 Warriors fans watching Steph warm up, standing in the stands, and there's nobody on the other side watching Donovan Mitchell. And like, it blew my mind. I was like, what is happening? And like the shots Steph was making, like everybody was just blown away. Like they would cheer every time. Like he would do trick shots and be like, oh, you know, like they'd never seen it before. But it was crazy. And I didn't realize that Clay also made something that was like 23 straight threes in that pregame as well. He did his pregame when all the media was meeting with the coaches. But it was something I never thought I'd ever see in the state of Utah. Is like, you know, you got the golden child, Donovan Mitchell, and nobody cares about him. They all just want to see Steph.
You know Donovan pretty well. I mean, you covered him for a long time. Do you think that bothered him? I mean, there's no way he didn't notice it, right? I mean, it's his court. He's out there. It's his fans. Is that the kind of thing that would resonate with him?
So I think what he chalked it up as, because also the University of Utah was playing Ohio State. It was like the fourth quarter. They had tied the game. So I think in Donovan's mind, he's probably like, oh, they're all just probably watching the Utah game. You know, like, but it's definitely like he had to notice it. Like it was so blatantly obvious, like the fact that the fans were standing. And then when Steph came off the court, you know, he took about 3 minutes, signed as many autographs as he could. And this Utah Jazz fan, this kid, hands him a Utah Jazz hat. Steph looks at it. He's like, you know, I don't play for this team. And like, he was going to hand it back, but he signed it anyways. And then like threw the pen in the crowd, but like, he was a good sport about it. But the fact that like his face was just like, what? You want me to sign this? I don't play for this team.
You tweeted that video out and I loved it. Not only just for the entertainment value of, you know, showing what kind of a superstar Steph is, that even opposing fans are desperate to have him sign their hat, something they're going to be, you know, wearing all the time. But I also love Steph's reaction, you know, because he was a little bit incredulous in a way that only Steph can be. His face screamed like, what's going on here?
Like, you really want me to sign this? Yeah.
But he had what looked like a 3-second interaction, if 3-second interaction with the fan, and in the course of those 3 seconds, at least based on my really biased perception, he made that fan feel important and included, and then gave off the hat and off he went. I mean, it was literally like a little joke, like, oh, you really want me to? And then, you know, he disappears and then has a fuck Donovan Mitchell shooting performance on half the court. And I got to ask you this, and Maxime, I'll direct it towards you. If you're there, right, you see Steph on one side, everyone's standing watching, you see Donovan on the other, nobody's there, it's in Donovan's arena. Would you feel bad for Donovan at all?
No. But I'm totally biased because, like, I'm a Steph Curry fan. Like, of course I'm going to be just paying attention to Steph. I'm probably going to not even notice that Donovan Mitchell is on the court.
Here's neurotic fact number, I don't know, 4,800,000 for me. So, yeah, I couldn't be more Homer, you know? I mean, obviously, I couldn't be a bigger Steph Curry fan. If I was there, I would have felt bad for him. Like, I don't like that, dude. I don't like when people feel left out.
Can I tell you, like, the thing that surprised me is Steph is this massive, like, the greatest shooter of all time, you know? And, like, he just takes warm-up, or he takes the pregame, like, doesn't wear any headphones, like, he does his own thing. And I see that, and that's more impressive to me because Donovan wears headphones, like Karl Anthony Towns. I've seen LeBron come out and put headphones on to, like, stay in the zone. Steph Curry's just like, oh, I'm going to make 5 in a row from half court and just interact with these fans, like, no big deal, you know? And that to me was more impressive than, you know, feeling sorry for Donovan that nobody cared about his shoot around.
Too bad that Donovan had headphones on, because if I was there, I would have been screaming things like, no, they like you too, Donovan. Like, don't worry about it. You're fine. To give you a sense of how deep this neurosis lasts in, and I have no idea why I'm telling this story, but I went to, my wife likes things like farmer's markets. I fucking hate farmer's markets. They combine my two, like, worst things. I hate buying things and I hate having people felt left out. So, like, if we walk around there and there's a booth that no one's going to, I'm immediately there pretending like I have some interest in their bullshit product. Last week, I bought a cow's wax candle. I have no idea what the fuck cow's wax is. I don't know how they make wax out of cows. All I can tell you is it smells like shit when you light it, and I probably would have felt really bad for Donovan. Let's move to our golden questions, you guys, and it's kind of a special one. So Clay's coming back, and I was going to limit this to only questions concerning Clay. Then KP, we're lucky enough to land you, and I've been secretly putting off all these Kuminga questions we've gotten to the side so that I can run them by it. So today we're going to combine them. Quick reminder, these are all questions that came from our fans. People are nice enough to write in. If you'd like to do that, shoot them to huddle@warriorshuddle.com. These questions occasionally get personal. Most of the time have to do with basketball. And here's our first quote. Assuming Clay gets back to at least 70% of where he was, how does he help the Warriors on and off the floor? KP, why don't you start us off?
I mean, just back at 70%, like the... When I saw the Warriors play against the Jazz the other night, it's like their offense is so fast. It's so fun. Steph already has, like, so much attention to him. He draws two defenders. It opens up the spacing on the floor. So you add Clay to that backcourt. I mean, then you've got so much to worry about, and it's just going to be like raining threes, and I'm so excited. And off the court, I mean, he's already been, like, he's traveling with the team. He's very active on the bench. I saw him, like, even sitting there in his, like, suit, you know, before everybody came out, he's shooting threes from the bench with Steph, like, having a good time. So I think he brings, like, great energy, and also, like, a lot of the young guys look up to him, and he's going to become a great leader.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Utah fans preferred watching Clay shoot from the bench than watching Donovan Mitchell play basketball, or that's all unfounded?
I would not go that far.
Unfounded. Okay. I mean, that's why we have you in. Yeah. That's why I use the phrase rumor. I mean, I don't know. I just read that somewhere. So I wanted to throw it by you. Maxime, what do you think? How's he help us?
Well, look, I mean, I think on the floor, it's very unlikely that the majority of that 70% is going to come from the offensive end. I think we're all pretty confident in seeing his game be pretty much the same, more or less, in that he's a spot up shooter. The question is how much he's going to actually provided the same impact that he had before on the defensive end. So, you know, I'm not to sort of bring it down if he's back at 70%, but that's the thing that I'm maybe looking for, is how quickly can he move around the court off the ball, I guess, on the offensive component. And, you know, he was reliably the guy that was handling the opposing team's best guard, right, to sort of give Steph a break on the defensive end. So we'll see how that all goes. I think, you know, the key almost for me, as much as being off the court, right, is sort of like off the ground, right? He's now commuting back and forth across by boat. And he's like bringing Wiseman in to his like boating expeditions. And we've seen a little bit of behind the scenes about that. And you see how much Wiseman gets lit up by being in his presence. And I think, you know, the more Warriors players, the more people from the Warriors staff, the more people from the Warriors huddle, let's say, he's bringing on his boat, the more this team is going to get amped up.
If you gave me like a list of things that I could do with NBA players that didn't have to do with NBA basketball, and I could choose from any of them, I think time on Clay's boat is like top three for me. There's some random ass video that showed him on a beach somewhere doing martial arts moves for like 35 seconds with a piece of like beach wood that he found. And I get the like the impression literally he was just riding around on his boat, saw some, you know, random stretch of sand, and is like, that needs to be used for a martial arts expedition right now. And like that's the kind of energy I'd like to be a part of. As far as how he helps the team, I mean, come on. He doesn't just fit the Warriors puzzle. He helped create it. You know, this is a guy who is going to help their spacing. It's a guy who's going to give them another score in the second unit. It's a guy who can switch everything. It's a guy who helps almost every component of this team. Also, as the resident body posture police, I feel like we're losing Kristen's fucking attention to.
I'm sweating now because
I don't even know what you're looking at. It's like
I'm sorry. I should have given a disclaimer. I have two games on right now. I've got Duke, Georgia Tech, and Florida, Alabama on right now. Sorry.
Well, I should give you a disclaimer. Every time I get the feeling that you're watching one of those, I'm going to take it super hard and get crazy distracted. So, you know, it is what it is. Apparently, you aren't the only person who is watching screens. So that you get that reference, by the way, when I gave Maxime a ton of shit last week for not, you know, nailing his role as body posture police. He's like, hey, I've got four screens up at all times. I didn't think in back-to-back episodes I'd be facing a screen problem, Kristen. So whatever's going on over there, you're driving me crazy.
At least I'm like leaving my camera on. I could turn my camera off and then you guys wouldn't even know. So
I'd much prefer that. I would much prefer that. Can we go back to a time when that's the option? Because at least then I wouldn't know I've totally lost your attention. I'll pick it back up on things that I like about his return off the floor. So look, three-time champion who everybody loves in the locker room, yeah? But this isn't coming directly from me. Here's a quote from an article I pulled from the Chronicle, and it came out a year ago. After Clay got hurt, he starts rehabbing the ACL, and here's what the article said. Quote, Thompson's easygoing demeanor melds ideally with the excitable Curry and fiery Draymond Green. During rough stretches in the season, Thompson has been known to keep the two teams' mood light with his unintentional brand of humor. Quote, it's important for all of us, as well as Clay himself, that he's around this season, Steve Kerr said. Continued Kerr, I would love to have him here as much as possible. That connection is really important. Clay is such a huge part of our team. I want our young players to feel his presence. So everything he adds on the floor, we've watched. We've watched during their dynastic run. I think what he's going to add off the floor is almost as important. So one of the things that gets thrown around is Warriors Twitter has been joking, you know, and it's not just Twitter, all forms of social media. Everyone's saying, hey, I'm going to shed a tear when Clay gets back out there. Maxime, you think you will? What kind of emotions do you think will get sparked when 11 gets back out on the floor?
I will absolutely shed a tear. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's even, I've already shed tears, right? As he's like walking off, holding six up, you know, just thinking about the amount of time that he's just absolutely one of my favorite players of all time. So yeah, I know that I will cry because I've already cried.
I'd like to tell you that I wouldn't cry, but since I almost cried because KP is no longer paying attention, I think we all know I'd be lying. Kristen, have you ever cried at a sporting event in any setting like that?
I don't think so, but I come from a family that literally like loves the Denver Broncos and loves John Elway. Like my parents moved from Northern California, where John Elway was a quarterback at Stanford, to Colorado. We've had season tickets ever since. And my mom had a retirement party when John Elway retired and she cried. I'm just kind of like a heartless bitch and like, I don't cry ever. So... No, I do not cry at sporting events.
I used to cry. This will be a shock to everybody. I was a petulant little bastard as a kid. And so like, and I took things crazy hard. So there was definitely times when my team lost and I cried, you know, and when I say kid, I mean, you know, 25, 26 years old, whatever. but I don't think I've ever cried in like a happiness setting. I went to the final game in Oracle, and the person I went with when Clay got hurt and then came back out and shot those free throws did have a tear coming down his face. And I'll share this with you guys, lied and pretended like that was me a couple of times. I've told that story and been like, oh, and when he came back out, just one tear came down, but it's never happened. If I had to guess, I don't think I'm going to cry when he's out there, but who knows? You know, we'll find out. Let's go to Kuminga. So backdrop. KP has been at the forefront of the Warriors Kuminga movement, at least as far as I'm concerned, since before the draft. We came to her, talked about the upsides. She nailed them. When he was first drafted, we came to her, talked about the upsides. She nailed them. He's played now. He's got some minutes. We've had a little bit of experience with Jonathan Kuminga. So here is our first question. Quote, what has impressed you so far about Kuminga's early NBA career?
I would say the fact that he is stepping into the role. He's not afraid to take the shots and he doesn't look timid. Like if you think back to what James Wiseman was last year, we saw him like a step behind defensively a lot and Draymond pulling him aside. Like he was really struggling. I don't see that with JK. I mean, even in the whatever, like 7 minutes he played in Utah, like they had him guarding Jordan Clarkson. And even there were times when Steph was on Jordan Clarkson and he was, you know, getting shots off. So it's not like Jordan's not a great player. And so the fact that like JK had that assignment and was doing really well defensively, I think that's something that will add to his game as his NBA career progresses. But I've just been mostly impressed with just like his demeanor on the court, the way he just takes the assignment. You know, he had four really horrible fouls in the Utah game. I told Bram, I was like, I came to see JK and like he played 2 minutes, got two quick fouls in the first half, comes in the second half, has two quick fouls, another 2 minutes. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
We all know the only reason you came was to stand and watch Steph warm up. So don't lie to us about the true rationale. What do you credit that with? Why? And so here, let me frame that a better way. So the thing that stuck out to me, I expected his athleticism. It's impressed me, but you know, I expected it. It didn't totally surprise me. The thing I wasn't ready for is his impressive basketball IQ. He seems to already know where he fits on the floor. And I'm not the only one to think that. Here's another quote I stole before we started this podcast. Quote, he sees the game way better than I thought he'd see the game. Kuminga's famously blunt teammate Draymond Green said the rookie skills at the start of the season. The way he can put the ball on the floor, collapse the defense, and kick it out. I didn't expect him to read the floor like that. He does a great job of it. And I think that is the biggest surprise for me. So KP, turning this into a follow-up question to you, and instead of it being a shot at Wiseman, you know, focusing only on Kuminga, why? What do you credit this with? Does it surprise you that he's able to speed his mind up this quickly? Is this something that he's always shown? Where's this coming from?
I mean, he's been a winner at every level of basketball he's ever played at. Like you have to remember he was the number one player in high school before he reclassed. And by the way, he didn't just reclass. He reclassed and decided to go play against pros as a 17-year-old. I mean, you see Scoot Henderson doing the same thing. That's a whole nother story. We'll talk about him like two drafts from now. But with Kuminga, I mean, it's just like he has said it to me simply. He has said it. And he does it like he says it like a kid. Like he just shrugs his shoulders. He's like, basketball's basketball, KP. Like if you can play a ball, like you can play at any level, you can play it anywhere. And that's what I'm doing. That's what I've always done. I'm just chilling. Like that's what he says to me. And I'm like, okay, just casually play in the NBA. Like, all right, JK, you do you. Like he's so just like casual about it and so confident in his ability. Like it doesn't surprise me at all because he's always been that way as a basketball player. Like he is from the Congo. You know what I mean? So what it's taken from him to come from there to here, dominate at the high school, dominate at the AAU level, play very, very well against pros in the G League. And then finally now he's got his shot at the NBA. To him, it's just like, yeah, it's just basketball.
Let's bring you up to speed, MT. I got some questions so that we get your opinions. First, just a little bit of background. KP is watching like 6 or 7 different college games right now. So she may be paying attention. She may not.
We'll find out.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably.
It's all right. I'm just doing my job. I'm a draft analyst.
I just want Marcus to know the setting. Hey, you don't have to get defensive. 2-4 screen Maxime has been taken off of Master of All Body Posture. That is now me. So keep your fucking body posture tight or I'll be calling you out. Which brings us to our questions. Pick one. How does Clay help us either on or off the floor when he gets back?
Like, Clay has always been a remarkable player that his skill set doesn't it matches up perfectly with Steph. Like, I think Wiggs said it in the last practice. He was joking with Draymond. He was like, the dude doesn't dribble the ball. And I think, you know, like, that highlights what kind of player Clay is. When he scores, you know, like, whatever, 60 something points and dribbles it 11 times, you know, that's just like a crazy stat, but it's really how he plays. Like, he floats, gets open, and doesn't need to put the ball on the floor to get off a good shot. That'll probably go in, you know, plus 40% of the time. So I think the gravity that Steph commands is one thing, and it's talked about a lot. I think Clay commands the second most gravity on that team. And when you add that onto the floor, I think it's just going to open up even more opportunities for Wiggins to continue to play at an all-star level, more opportunities for Jordan Poole to sit in the corner and just drain the three all day, and more opportunities for Draymond to have, you know, the fake screen and fake roll and just dive to the basket and get a dunk. So I think on the floor, his playing style, you know, is going to be a perfect complement. And like everybody's saying, you know, when he's out there, it's going to make us a dangerous, dangerous team, which we already have the best record in the league.
Much more importantly, so the audience didn't get to hear this, but Christian made it clear that she prefers Maxime's beard to mine, which I'm not taking very well. So, you know, now looking at the two beards, can we agree that my beard is actually much nicer?
I'm going to go with Maxime's too.
Oh my God. Dude. Maxime, can we just cut out your video so that we don't have to worry about my growing beard envy? And then final question, don't answer it yet, MT. The question will be, do you think you will cry when Clay comes onto the floor for the first time on Sunday? Christian, what's your guess? Marcus will be honest with us. You know, what do you think? When they come out there, will MT shed a tear?
No, he doesn't look like a crier. He looks like a hard ass like me.
Man, I'm trying to remember if I said I was going to cry or not. I think all I said was that I was a petulant little bastard when I was a kid, so I'm not sure that helps at all. Also, as the body posture master, when I started up the segment, I feel like Marcus started nodding like profusely, so I think he's going to say he is going to cry. Maxime, round out our guesses.
I mean, this might be one of the rare times that Marcus doesn't tell the truth if he isn't going to cry. I think no matter what actually happens, he's going to say he's going to cry because it's Klay Thompson.
MT?
I'm definitely not going to cry.
Because you're a badass? Fuck you.
Yeah, I'm a hard ass. So KP called it. No, I mean, it's going to be a emotional moment for sure. And it's going to be great. You know, it's a long time coming, but it doesn't generate tears for me. I'm just happy for the dude. He gets to play the sport he loves. And coincidentally, he happens to be really, really good at what he loves and on my favorite team.
I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I'm way too much of a hard ass to cry in any sporting event. So if I didn't answer it before, I should probably say it now. Christian, take the mic again. Bring us back to Kuminga. Take me to the other side of the coin. So if that's something that's impressed you, what's something that, if concerned is too strong of a word, something that stuck out as not so positive to the early portion of his NBA career?
I mean, I know we're focused on his like IQ and how it might be elevated for a rookie, but I haven't necessarily been impressed with like his reads off the ball screen, I guess. I mean, I feel like he's always just looking for Steph, and I wish that he would have a little bit more assertiveness and just make the right read. You know what I mean? And so, yep. I think in his mind, he knows his role. He knows he's just out there to give whoever else a break. And like, it wasn't until I saw him play in Toronto when everybody was out, you know, Yep. And he had 26 points or whatever. And I think that was more of like a personal vendetta, because Scotty Barnes, who went number four, is getting a lot of rookie of the year love. Kuminga and him have played together against each other on the AAU circuit on the Nike EYBL. So I think that was like a personal, like, no, I'm going to show you what my future is and who I'm going to be.
If the Warriors' circumstances were always like that Toronto game, right? Because they had a bunch of people missing because of COVID. And then as a reaction, they also sat a bunch of the veterans. I think that Steph and Draymond didn't even travel. No. Andre wasn't there, all of that. So let's say it was a similar circumstance. You know, Kuminga finds himself in a circumstance that Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham and some of these other rookies do. If that was the setting, do you think that Kuminga would be putting up 25 a night?
My gosh, if Jonathan Kuminga was playing for the Houston Rockets, he would be putting up 28, 25 a night, hands down.
I'd love to hear that.
I'm curious, Greg, because I don't have the skills that you do, obviously, in evaluating talent. And I'm wondering to what extent this is just like a young person in his role that is watching Steph, or like would other, you know, if like Scotty Barnes is on the team, right, would he be doing a better job making reads off the screen? Or is this just, you know, like I said, the nature of a young player?
I think it's just the nature of a young player. But also, I mean, if we're going to compare Kuminga with Scotty Barnes, Scotty is a way better defender. And I feel like his feel for the game as a rookie is a little bit elevated to JK.
Fair enough. But does he, I guess I'm wondering.
I know what you're saying. Like if he was in the same, would he be looking for Steph off
exactly.
Every? Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Like he's the,
yeah.
Of course, if you're on the court with the best shooter of all time, like you want to get him touches. Like you don't want to be the reason why you miss out on a possession.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I mean, and you're in the midst of a weirdo possible MVP season, you know, the Kuminga's stuck in this kind of, he wants to develop himself, but he also wants to show the Warriors that no, I'm part of this. And the fastest way to show everyone in that franchise that you're willing to be a team player is just to look for 30 in, you know, in every possible scenario. Boys, take me back to Clay. So give me your favorite off the court Clay moment. You know, not the 37 points, but something he did that strikes out. You know, we've heard the scaffolding, we've heard the signing the toaster, things like that. Is there one of those that is your absolute favorite?
I'll go first. It was how he told his parents where he was going to play college basketball. So apparently he was on multiple recruiting trips and really liked a college that he went to. I don't remember which one it was. We'll just say Oregon for whatever sakes. So gets back and his parents are in their house downstairs and his mom gets a call on her phone and it's Clay. And Clay says, hey, I'm going to Washington State. Just, you know, I want to let you guys know. And his mom was like, okay, and hung up. And his dad was like, who is that? And he was like, it was Clay. And he said he's deciding to go to Washington State because he really liked whatever he just saw online. And he was like, isn't Clay home? And she was like, yeah, he's upstairs. So Clay Thompson decided to go to Washington State based on whatever he was looking at online at the moment. And instead of walking down the stairs to have that moment with his parents, he just called them.
He grew up in a 50 floor estate. That's what you don't know. It's a super long ass walk. I got a random one for you. So this one comes from Andre, and more specifically Andre's book, The Sixth Man. And the book sets up that the Warriors are all sitting around talking about, you know, their biggest accomplishments, a moment during their career where they felt that they were the most successful. And here's what the book says, quote, when Clay's turn came, we all assumed he was going to say that his highest moment was the day he scored 37 points in a quarter against Sacramento. I mean, that was an NBA record, but he didn't. Instead, he said, my best moment was one night I caught a pass and I was like 50 feet from the basket and I was about to shoot it. And all of a sudden I hear Andre saying, what the fuck, Clay, you're 50 feet out. And I thought about it for a second and shot it anyway. It went in and I was like, yeah, Andre, fuck you. We all had a good laugh about that. And I was like, what? Really, dog? And he said, yeah, that was my best moment. I love that, dude. I love that for multiple reasons. I love what it shows about Clay on the court, but I also love what it shows about the relationship between Clay and his teammates. I mean, the punchline in that between the guy who's telling the story is Clay told me
fuck you. And still it's told as an endearment, as this wonderful, you know, connection they had between the two. So I'm on board. Maxime, what do you got?
Yeah, so I'm really excited to share this story, because we were talking before we went on air. It's like, oh, we don't have any personal stories, but I actually do have a personal story. I didn't necessarily get to meet him, but I was in the same sphere off the court. I was hanging out with my buddies, walking around Lake Merritt. This is, I think, 2013, right? So Clay was still pretty young in his career. And we went to get some tacos over at Tacos Mi Rancho, which is over there on the south side of the lake. And we put in our order, and we're sort of sitting off to the side waiting for them to call our number. And none other than Clay Thompson, which you can see from a mile away because he's like huge, right? Comes up on a skateboard, because I guess at the time he was living in the towers right next to Lake Merritt, rolls right up, picks up an order. So I guess he called it in. So this must have been a regular occurrence. Hops right back on the skateboard and sort of takes off. And there were like a lot of people there, right? A lot of Warriors fans. Everybody sort of recognized, even if they didn't know who it was, that's definitely a basketball player, right? And there was this sort of like awe of, whoa, what just happened? Somebody literally rolled up, grabs whatever burrito and like rolls off. And it was just like, so he's such a man of the people. He's the type of dude that like calls his mom from upstairs, you know, calls me Rancho from down the block to order his food, just because he's chilling. It was just such a beautiful, like, oh, he's a man of the people experience.
I love that, because there's a 70% chance that that was not his order. The fool just rolled in there in a skateboard and grabbed somebody's burrito. And if that is what happened, there's 100% chance of whoever's burrito that was totally fine and giving it to Clay. You know, it was like, fuck it. Like, yeah, I'll order a new one. What a great experience for me.
That was my burrito. I shed a tear, but it was worth it.
Yeah. Exactly right. KP, back to you. And this one's a little personal, but it's one I'm very excited to hear its answer. What is a piece of dating advice you would give to the men of Utah? So what can they do to help make a better first impression outside of terrible mustaches and mullets?
My gosh. All right. Let me tell you what not to do. This is for men everywhere. Do you know what? I feel like I've been like the sounding board for things that men should never say to women. Like, I was in a long-term relationship, and the guy, we eventually broke up, but we were together for like 6 years. And I was like, are we doing this? Like, are we going to get married? And he's just like, I know you think 6 years is a long time, but forever is a really long time. So like, this is just like, I feel like people just look at me, they're like, you know what? I'm going to say exactly what's on my brain. Like, things that you should never, ever say to women. For instance, 2 weeks ago, I was on a date. And this guy, first of all, like, never, ever say ever, why are you still single? Like,
oh,
stop. Don't say that. Like, why do you need an explanation? I'm saying, like, we're sitting here having dinner. Don't ask me that. Then he said, I don't understand this whole facade that you women put up about being Miss Independent. It's not a thing. Don't you know that you were put on this earth to be with a man?
Oh, did he take a time machine to this fucking date? How the hell did that happen?
And so then my brother, I think I told you this story, Bram. My brother goes, he's like, did you get up and walk out? And I was like, no, I ordered the lobster. It was the most expensive thing on the menu. I took two bites. I said I wasn't hungry, and I made him pay for it. And then I ghosted him, and I never talked to him again.
I do remember this, because what I remember saying is, you should have ordered stock in the fucking restaurant. Be like, I'd like to order 30% of this restaurant, please. And you know, then explore it from there.
Yeah.
I was sitting at a bar recently. I was grabbing a drink, waiting for a friend. And there was a couple right next to me. And the dude started talking to this one. They looked like they'd been together for a while. Who knows? And they were watching a football game, and he gave some piece of sporting information to her. I wasn't paying attention to that. And she was playing along with him. Like, you could tell she was crazy bored by it, but fuck it. You know, she's there on a date. She'll play along with him, and starts to interact with the piece of information. And she got three words in, and the guy said, I feel like you're already wrong. I was like, oh my God. Like, almost like stepped in, like, excuse me, sir. Couldn't help but notice that you're a gigantic douche asshole. Like, where do you think this is going to go from here? Who has ever heard the phrase, you are already wrong, and was like, I'd like to continue this conversation?
I feel like, no, I've done that when people try to, like, they think that they know more about basketball than I do on a date. And I'm like, you don't. Like, yes, you could be a fan, but this is what I do 50 hours a week. Like, right now I've got two games on. And I'm
okay, there you podcast. Go. You're saying that like I don't know that. The last time I felt like someone was telling me you are already wrong is when you looked away at the screen while we were trying to talk. Boys, make this personal to you. What's the worst dating experience you're willing to share with us on this show?
You mean besides the time that I dropped a mag light on my girlfriend?
Yeah, besides the time that you climbed a ladder and like gave the woman behind you a concussion. To give you a little time to think, I'll go first. It's kind of an embarrassing one. So first year of law school, I went to an event with my wife. So, you know, date, I don't know how you use that phrase. We'll call it a date. We've been together for a long time. But at that stage, my wife was basically buying my clothes and was confident I could not clothe myself. So we go to this date. It's a nice event. And part of it was I was going to go buy my own brand new suit. And so I show up in this new suit. So it's an opportunity to both, you know, have a nice night with the wife and to show her that I'm competent at my own shopping. Well, about 30% in, I realized that the suit I had bought and I'm wearing is a woman's suit. It doesn't have any fucking pockets, and the jacket is cut hell of tight in the back. And I now have to spend, like, my first approach was like, I'm just going to sit down the whole time and she'll never see it. Well, I got to ride back home to the same place we were living with her. So ultimately she realized my pocketless women's suit, and, you know, it could have gone better for me.
That's a very Michael Scott moment for you.
It was very similar to The Office. This is where you guys also have embarrassing stories. You fuckers leave me out on this limb. I'm not going to take
all
it.
All right,
out.
No, that's fine. I got you. I mean, I
you
have
stand
all
up and you're wearing women's pants right now.
I might be. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not trying to flirt, so I'm not in a bikini and high heels or whatever.
You're not walking Gary.
Exactly.
No, I feel like I've shared other stories. So the one maybe that I haven't shared that I'll share this time is I took a girl out on a date in high school. And at the time I was like very sure of myself, and it turns out that I was just as weird then as I am now. Which is I drove a station wagon. It had been kitted out. So Volvo, right? 1992 station wagon. It had been completely kitted out. I had a subwoofer, even though it was a station wagon. It was just like strapped into the corner of the thing, right? Because at the time, like, I was a runner and I listened to music, and that was like my identity. So I take this girl out on a date. We got hot chocolate. It was very romantic. I can already tell she wasn't that into me, but like, I was like, great, we're on our way back. Like, what song do you want to listen to? And she put on some song, and the song finished, and I was like, you know, like, I had this slick line. I don't remember, but it was something to the effect of like, this car is a perfect representation of who I am, right? Because like, you know, it's like, I can go anywhere, right? Like, I run super fast, and like, so I can jump out of the car and go, and like, isn't this sound system really great? And she didn't even dignify me with a response. It was complete silence. I was like, I'm so cool. The subwoofer just slapped. How sick is this? And it was dead silent.
I mean, I feel her. If the first compliment you gave yourself about the car was, this car can take me anywhere I want to go, that is not specific to that car, dude. What you just described is any car with wheels, I feel like. The Flintstone car would take you anywhere you wanted to go.
Wait, can I tell you guys, because you just now triggered a high school memory of mine. This isn't a horrible date, but it's something horrible that I did. So I have a twin sister, and in high school, she wanted to break up with her boyfriend, and she was super shy and didn't know how to do it. So I did it for her, and I made it. So like she calls him and is like, hey, let's go to the movies. Let's go. And I was like, it has to be at night, because like, then I'll get in the car and he won't be able to tell right away that it's not you. And so like, he pulls into the driveway. My sister's like waiting by the door. And I was like, this will be over in 20 seconds. Like, cause again, like, I'm a cold hearted bitch. I don't care. I'll break people's heart all the time. So I get in the car and I was like, before we go, there's something I need to tell you. This isn't working out. He's like, are you okay? There's something different about you. I was like, this isn't going to work out. Have a good night. Bye. I got out of the car.
Okay. Kristen, did you do that because you wanted to help your sister, or did you do that because you kind of wanted to fuck with that dude and just enjoyed pulling the wings off a fly? My guess is the second.
No, I wanted to help my sister. She was super stressed out about it. I was like, girl, this will be over in 20 seconds. Like, I got this. And then it continued in college. Like, if she went to a bar and like, she met a dude, but she didn't want to talk to him, she would give them my number in New York. And then like, I get a text or a phone call from a dude that she had met in San Diego, and I'd have to pretend to be Lisa and be like, yeah, I'm not really interested. Sorry. It was great meeting you. This isn't going to work out.
Can I, a quick follow-up question. Do twins text the same? How is that an important thing?
What do you mean? No, this is back, like, I'm old. So this was the, like, texting. Like the guys would literally like call me on the phone. Remember the old flip phones? Remember how hard that was to text?
T9. Like
it, yeah.
You press it three times.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 C, boom, boom.
Phone calls were the way that like you would follow up after you got a girl's number at the bar. So they would call me and I'd be like, yeah, I'm Lisa.
Did you panic a little bit when you were breaking up with that dude and he said, you seem different? Was there a portion of you was like, oh no.
I know.
Like the fucking jig is up.
That's why I was like, I got to go. I got to get out of here. I was like, have a good night.
I also like that you started off with, before we go, you fucking liar. You guys weren't going anywhere. just been like, dude, it's over. Fuck yourself. I'm out.
He was picking me up for the movies. And so I was like,
okay. No, he was not. He was picking Lisa up for the movies. He was not fucking picking you up at all. He didn't know that you existed in any way.
I mean, listen, it might be one of his worst stories, but it's like one of my favorite from high school era.
Do you know how much I hope that when we ask Marcus what his worst story is, he's like, yeah, one time a twin broke up with me pretending to be the other twin.
Exactly.
That would be.
I was getting ready to go to the movies and see.
I could tell something was different. I knew something was off the whole time. MT, what's your story? And it better be embarrassing, dude. Don't give us one of these of like.
I don't really have a good one. I was trying to think that whole time.
Of course you do.
I can't think of one. The closest is a bad one was when I was super young. My family's from Michigan and we would go to Michigan every summer, and we have a big family on my dad's side, so we were going out to this popular spot in Detroit called Belle Isle, and we were going over there and hanging out, and I was like, oh, that girl's kind of cute, and was, you know, like figuring out how I'm gonna go talk to her and go up and go talk to her and, you know, say whatever. And I was like, cool. Brother comes over. And it was just like, he's like, were you just talking to that girl right there? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, you know, that's your cousin, right?
Oh.
So, yeah. So I
that's
came
really embarrassing.
Karis, very, very close to trying to date my cousin, apparently.
Yeah, no, I think there's a word for that. I think it's called incest.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm glad that that's where we landed. I also like that you said that you didn't have anything embarrassing and you're trying to hook up with your cousin. So, I mean, I was going to give you, I'm over here in women's pants. Maxim is pretending to be a Swedish car known for safety, and you were going to say you had nothing, but fortunately, we got there.
A very Utah story you just told, MT. Yeah.
You're going to have to move.
I'm about to say, not going to help you.
And for those who think that was Christian Peake, it's not. That's her twin, Lisa. She has a lot of negative takes about Utah. Here's our final question, and I'm going to be transparent about it. I am nervous about your response. I am legitimately worried about the response. So the question itself is simple, but it requires a little explanation. Here's the question. Quote, is Kuminga happy with his role and future in Golden State? So simple enough, you know, he's been anointed the future. He seemingly is playing really well, and there's lots of reasons to be optimistic about all things Kuminga. But it got a little complicated for me, and here's why. I recently read a Dime magazine piece by an author named Katie Heindel, and it was called Jonathan Kuminga's Journey to the NBA. It has always been about perspective, and this quote and passage appears in it. Quote, Kuminga was drafted 7th by the Warriors, a distinction he shares with his cousin, Emmanuel Mudiay, who was drafted 7th by the Nuggets. When asked if it irked him not to go at least one higher so he could tease Mudiay, Kuminga turns serious. Quote, I wanted to go one, he said, his voice decisive. I know I was going one, but I don't know what happened. I can't control it. I dropped to 7. While he admits being drafted to a team like the Warriors is something he was still really happy about, there's a sense when speaking to Kuminga that the results of the draft have become a source of stubborn inspiration for him, evident on the floor this season and in his quick crumpling of a potential opening icebreaker. So here's what worries about this. If he is focusing on the draft and what he would like to do is gone number one, and he's focusing on recent past, not distant legacy future, there is a chance that currently, even though we all know that his future is currently bright, his present is nothing compared to the, Evan Mobley's of the world, to the Jalen Green opportunities, to the types of shots that Cade Cunningham can have. And as smart as we've said Kuminga is, he's still 19, you know, and at 19 years old, it'd be real easy to look around, see. I mean, we were joking earlier, Christian, you went to go watch him in Utah, but he only got, 2 minutes because of fouls. He's disappeared in some games. because this opportunity is designed to make him a success in what, 4 years, 5 years, not right now. So you know him. You know him personally. I mean, you've really gotten to know his personality. What's your sense of this? And it's speculation, you know, but like, what's your sense? Is he happy in his current role here in Golden State?
I think he's probably frustrated. I mean, we've talked about this. Like, when I spoke to him at the beginning of the season, like he was frustrated, like having to put minutes in the G League, do assignments in the G League and not see prominent minutes in the rotation for the Warriors, the team that he was drafted to. So it's, you know, someone that's always been told probably his entire life, you're great at basketball, you're great at basketball, you're the guy, you're the guy, you're the guy, to now have to step in and be humbled in a rotational spot. That's going to take, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some growing pains. It's going to take some getting used to. So we're seeing that now with him. Like, is he frustrated? Probably. I mean, guys are in the NBA because they love basketball. They're in the 1% of all basketball players in the world, and they're playing at the highest level. So does he look at other guys that were drafted before him and think, that should be me, I should have that opportunity, I should be getting those numbers every night? Probably.
As an older person, it's way easy for me to see, okay, you know, it'd be frustrating, but if the Warriors came to me and said, you're not going to get it now, but you are our future, which presumably they're doing, you know, they're not telling me he has to earn it. I'm sure they're telling him, like, just give us a couple years, learn this system, then you'll dominate in it. His maturity level, do you think that if that is in fact happening, do you think that that speaks to him? Does that calm down any concerns he might have?
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine, right? Like, I'm sure those conversations have happened within the Warriors organization. And I'll tell you something, like Moses Moody, Mo said to me draft night when I was like saying, oh, congratulations, whatever. He's like, we're here, we've made it, but we're far, far away from making it. You know what I mean? Yep. And so Mo has the right attitude. Yep. JK probably is feeling still slighted about being drafted 7 and wants to make a statement, but those opportunities aren't going to come because he's on the best team in the NBA. Yep.
Last personality question. A while ago, I had my first job. It's an opportunity in a law firm. And there was with some people who were good at their job. And my personality type, I'll listen and I will say all the right things, but I'm not really good with advice. And I get defensive almost, you know, like I almost want to show everybody I'm already good at it. And so why are you telling me things? I should already be competent in this, you know? Whereas other people who I was working with were smart. Even though they were good at their job, they sat back, they listened, you know? But what it teaches me is there's a personality that you need to be able to benefit from mentors. It's not enough just to be in a position where there's a mentor. You also have to be open to them. So the thing we keep hearing about Wiseman and Kuminga is that they are surrounded by mentors. They're surrounded by uncles, Uncle Draymond, Uncle Steph, Uncle Clay soon, Uncle Steve. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people there. Personality-wise, is Kuminga the type of person who will accept a mentor from what you know?
I think so. He is like a worker, you know. So obviously he's on a team now where he's seen the success of Draymond, Clay, and Steph. So if any one of those three guys approach him and said, hey, you know, let's work on this. Like, you got to see this in the offense. You got to work on this rotation on the defensive side. He's going to soak that up like a sponge.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and take heart to it. Because I think he does know, like, he's young. And, like, if he wants to have a long career, like, he's got to get to that second contract. He's got to show that he's a team player and not be, like, a Kevin Porter Jr. of the world.
Yeah.
You know, right. And blow up a locker room.
You don't think he should try to throw something at his coach and then bounce at halftime? That's not a super good thing to do. Or
I wouldn't recommend that. I don't know. I'm not an expert. But
if the Warriors could only develop one, so they won't. They'll develop both. We'll be fine. And you know, their future is crazy bright. But just for the purpose of this question, they could only develop one of them, Wiseman or Kuminga. Who's more important for their future in your mind?
JK Kuminga.
Why?
To me, Kuminga's a star because he can guard multiple positions. He's more of an offensive threat. And there are other players coming up in this draft that you can get for rim protection.
Yep.
And what Wiseman brings to the table. I think JK is a special talent and a player like JK isn't going to fall in your lap at 19 very often.
if you commissioned a bunch of basketball scientists to create a body that was perfect for 2022 basketball, you would create fucking Jonathan Kuminga, you know, a 6'8" uber athlete who can get to the rim at fucking will and can guard all positions. And if he can develop that three, he is literally the embodiment of what current basketball is, you know? So I agree with you. Boys, do you? You can only pick one. You're only developing one of the two prized young players. Whom is it?
Well, look, I mean, I have learned now a number of times to never question KP. So this is not in any way going against that. But what I'm thinking of is I read sort of this.
Sounds like he's going to question you, KP, which makes me hell of excited.
Bring it on. This reference of a dichotomy, right? There are two types of players. This was an article about Andrew Wiggins on ESPN talking about he's a number one pick. He had the perfect body for the NBA, right? An athlete that like broke the charts on all levels, all of these sorts of things. But it turned out he didn't necessarily have the genius, right? He had the body, but maybe not the brain. And so, you know, I'm just sort of remembering Mandarin speaking James Wiseman over here, potentially totally positing this as a potential, might end up being the person that has more of the mental capacity to excel. And we also know that he's an incredibly gifted physical athlete. So, you know, if there's one way that those went out, you know, maybe we understand that JK has a lot of the work ethic, but maybe he can't excel on the genius level, in the way that Wiggins couldn't either.
I just have one question. How many games has Wiseman played? And coming off a meniscus tear, which
sounds like she felt questioned.
I'm sorry, but like,
fuck you, Maxine.
But like, when I tore my meniscus, I wasn't out for a year. I was out for 8 weeks.
Yeah, I only have one question. Are you Lisa? This whole thing, I kind of hope that you have your twins sit in at some point. Marcus, what's your response? And feel free to question KP.
Exactly. Anytime you start with, I don't want to question KP, but.
I love the butt. We all knew it was coming. There's no question at all. His body posture screamed, there's a butt.
Exactly. Now I'm going with Kuminga too. I think you have to remember that he didn't grow up in the United States. So all of the playing basketball, like it's the equivalent of growing up in England and playing soccer, right? Like you just are exposed to better soccer players and the sport in a different way. When you grow up in the United States, you're exposed to basketball in a different way. And he didn't get that exposure for those early years. So I think he's still learning how to become a basketball player. So all of this is just pure raw talent. And he's doing all of this off of pure raw talent. So I just think the sky's the limit for him. When you ask KP, like, is there anything that you don't like? To me, it's the body language. It's probably because he's 19 and frustrated and doesn't feel like he should have went 7 and isn't getting enough playing time in his mind. But he and Wiseman both don't seem like they're having as much fun on the court as you should be when you're playing with Steph and on this team. So for whatever it's worth, it doesn't seem like it seems to be an issue that people care about, but for some reason it matters to me. But I just hope and look for both Kuminga and Wiseman to enjoy the game a little bit more. I think they will play better if they're out there having more fun and not so hard on themselves. Like, their time will come. They will be, you know, the faces of this franchise and, you know, soak up the game from the vets that they can right now. Iguodala told it to Jordan Bell and those other rookies. He was like, this isn't a normal situation. You're coming into an organization that is at the top of the league. Like, there are a few other really well-run organizations, but the Warriors are right up there. So it isn't like this in every team, and it isn't like this in the NBA. This is a bubble situation. So take advantage of it and learn from it. And hopefully, to KP's point, that's sinking into Kuminga, and Wiseman's been soaking it up while he's been taking 10 times as long to recover from an injury that KP dominates.
Here's something you guys don't know. Over the course of our 2+ decade friendship, I've told Marcus 1,000 times, stop talking about soccer. Nobody gives a shit about soccer. Stop making soccer fucking references. Stop bringing it up. And I just can't. It's a fight I cannot win.
A beautiful game.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that phrase. You know I hate that phrase. Kristen, you were phenomenal. You always are. And I am positive, I'm not the only one thinking it, for those who need more KP in their life, where do they go?
Well, you can find me on Hinge for all the single guys out there. No, I'm just kidding.
Mustaches only, please.
I can't believe you're still single.
I don't, God. No, you can read all my stuff on Yahoo Sports. I've got rookie power rankings coming up next week, mock drafts leading up to the NBA draft, or follow me on Twitter, Instagram at Kristen Peek.
And if you'd like to find the gentleman who told Christian that women are only there to be with men, you want to look somewhere in the 1920s. It's not going to be easy to get back there, but
his
whatever
number is, do. Just kidding.
Yeah, there you go for us. You want to reach out to us, get us some questions, let us know we did a good job, bad job, any job, hit us up on our email account, which is
huddle@warriorshuddle.com.
Boom. We're also up on social media, only one, Twitter. There we are at Warriors Huddle. And finally, if you'd like to watch the Patreon feed, if you want to see the video, make fun of any of the things that are going on here, act as our master of all things body posture. All you got to do is support us for as little as $1 a month to do that. Hop up on Patreon. You can see Marcus awkwardly dancing right now. You can donate as little as $1 a month and it'll help us more than we can possibly tell you. In fact, shout out to all of our executive producers. Those are the people who are donating more than $15 a month. They are Steve, Rob, Noah, Jeff, Cheryl, and Amy. You mean the absolute world to us. With that in mind, go Warriors. Hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good.